I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 156 for the weekend starting 21 October 2016.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, we chat about Vumatel's acquisition of Fiberhoods.
Also this week, Cell C's financial results, the looming MacBook Pro refresh, the demise of the Samsung Galaxy Note 7, and more on the ICT policy white paper.
It's a good show. Let's get the show on the road.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Let's do our quiz. Do you want to kick it off?
Yes, let's go right into it. First question. We finally have sight of Celsius' full financial numbers. How much of net profit did it turn in the first 6 months of 2016?
Second question. Which smartphone did Lenovo launch in South Africa this week?
Third question. Naspers this week sold one of its investments for 46 billion rand. Who was it?
Fourth question. Microsoft shares hit a record high in after-hours trading on Thursday, but the company remains the third largest tech company in the U.S. by market capitalization. Which companies are bigger than it?
And the last question. The new HBO science fiction series called Westworld tackles issues like artificial intelligence. It's been getting rave reviews around the world, and it's based on a 1973 movie that was directed by which well-known author and movie director?
Great, that's our quiz this week. A couple of toughies in there, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But let's get stuck into the show. And we're having some beer again.
Yes, indeed.
And it was my turn to pick this week, and I've bought something purely
based on the label.
I went on the label alone, yes. It's a beautiful label, and I love the name of the stuff. It's Brouwer Brews Wuffelfontein Leverolie. Liver oil in English, Witbier. And we've just opened it, and it's quite nice.
No, it's a very nice beer, and I've had it a few times before. I've actually featured it numerous times, and it's an easy drinking beer for a hot day. You know, it's not as if you like a Weiss beer, you'll definitely love this. It's kind of a different take on kind of that flavor.
Yeah, but I just love the packaging. The front resembles a large stamp. There's a raven in a corner. There's a picture of Paul Kruger at the top, Springbok at the bottom right, and clearly a lot of thought has gone into this. It's made by a company, funnily enough, called Mainstream Brewing Company, which is a bit of a laugh. I guess they were having a laugh when they came up with the name. Lanseria Business Park, Falcon Lane, Lanseria, which is obviously just north of us here in Johannesburg. But I love the wording on the back of this. Rafa, your Afrikaans is much better than mine. Maybe you can read this.
I don't read or talk much Afrikaans, but okay, so on the back of the label, hierdie lafenis word gemaak deur die befaamde brouwerbroers van gars geplant in die skaduwee van die Magaliesberg. Die broers dreun sig daagliks uitgesoekte werkte van Langenhoven, Eugene Marais en Twitius, terwyl hulle uit die uitgesoekte gars sprinkel met die trane van 'n hartseer bosbok. Die bier, it's actually very,
it's
nice to read. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's very old Afrikaans.
Very old Afrikaans, yes.
Die bier
poetic almost.
Yeah, it is poetic. Mm. And die bier fermenteer in absolute stilte binnen suiwer platinum vate van dag tot dag. Let me just read that again. Die bier fermenteer in absolute stilte binnen suiwer platinum vate tot die dag dat 'n begaafde raaf op Paul Kruger se graf geland het en die wysie van Kent G.I. de Volk gevleid het. Daardie raaf vlieg dan na die broerse plaas en pik die seel op die brouwerkamer se deur oop. Die bier word daarna gebottel en per pospelikaan na uitgesoekte handelaars vervoer.
That's lovely stuff.
Jeez.
Pospelikaan.
So it was.
But yeah, it's very old Afrikaans, but lovely stuff. Really, a lot of passion went into making this product.
And a great example of, you know, one of the things I love most about craft beer is the kind of the look and feel people put around their beers, because it adds a lot to the flavor and kind of the idea of craft beer coming from a place, you know, yes, whether it's a place of passion or a history or, and I think these guys have pulled it off. Very nice.
Yeah. And of course, the label should be a talking point, right? I mean, it's a social thing.
So. Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. And they're quite active on Facebook too, and the guys get around lots of festivals and things, so well worth checking out. And they're also the guys that do the Bart Willy. They've got a similar brand of beard oils.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I can't remember the name. I think it's called Bart Leverwilly. Bart Willy.
Hopefully, I don't get the production line mixed up. I won't forgive them for that. But lovely stuff. So go check it out. If you're a beer drinker, Buffelsfontein Leverwilly Witbier. Lovely stuff. Anyway, that's going to. what's the word? I can't think of the word now.
It's
going to help the conversation flow along. Because there's plenty of tech news to talk about this week. And an interesting story, and I think it may be the first of many, an announcement earlier this week that Vumatel is buying Fiberhoods. Obviously, two FTTH providers, Vumatel obviously being the bigger of the two. But Fiberhoods also has built up quite a presence in Johannesburg specifically, I think in about 15 or 20 suburbs. And so this deal is giving Vumatel access to more suburbs. But interestingly enough, these two companies have chosen very different technologies to deploy.
Yes.
Fiberhoods is obviously aerial fiber, and Vumatel is going the more expensive and but ultimately probably better route of trenching fiber.
I agree.
But I wonder if this means that Vumatel is going to consider a different mix of deployments in the future, or whether any future work done by Fiberhoods will be trenched, whether this is just simply an acquisition to take a competitor out of the market.
I think it's a bit of everything. Obviously, if you're in this space, getting a competitor is one of the best ideas you can do, because now you're immediately a larger part of that market share.
Yeah.
But I think it makes sense for the company to kind of cross-pollinate their technologies and make use of it where they work better. I mean, we know where they've deployed Fiberhoods in some of the older suburbs. They did it, from what I believe, because it was too expensive to trench some of those roads because it's so heavily populated, or the infrastructure is so old there with probably lots of stuff in the ground already.
Yeah.
It makes sense to, in some places, I would imagine, put up aerial fiber, but... Yeah, I think it's a good move. Definitely a good move.
And no doubt, I think the start of further consolidation in this market. And I've heard estimates anywhere between 20 and 35 fiber to the home providers in the market at the moment.
Sure.
Many of those obviously very small. Some of the bigger names, obviously companies like Vumatel, Fiberhoods, Link Africa, then obviously the big telcos, MTN, Vodacom, Telkom, now OpenServe, of course. Cell C isn't doing its own infrastructure, but they're in that space as an ISP. But I think there naturally has to be some consolidation, and I think Telkom is the obvious one to do the consolidating.
Yeah.
Telkom and maybe the big mobile operators as well.
And these guys,
they've got the balance sheet to do it.
And they've been trenching, obviously, in your part of the world here. I believe it's gone well. You said it's a few days to go, and you guys...
I will soon have Vumatel at home. I'm looking forward to it. I've already signed up the package, and I've gone for a 100 megabit per second symmetrical connection.
As one does.
I might downgrade it later, but I have to have the fastest available option, at least for the first few months, just to test it out.
Yeah.
It's overkill. I'll be the first to admit that. I'll probably downgrade to 50-50.
Look, it may be overkill, but it makes a lot of things a lot easier when you need it. It's almost like that power on demand.
Yes.
That's really how I see it. I mean, and for streaming too. I mean, multiple streams in a house, we have multiple devices.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I'm going to probably shoot a lot more YouTube video, actually, just because it's going to be such a pleasure to upload it onto YouTube. I think the biggest bottleneck now will be YouTube's processing of the video rather than uploading it to YouTube.
Oh, yeah. And then we should definitely try some live streams.
We should try that as well at some point, Great. Well, that's the acquisition news handled this week. Now, Cell C, speaking of which, they've published, Blue Label Telecoms, which is buying a 45% stake in them, has published their first set of full financial results, Cell C, that is. This came as part of a circular to shareholders published this week, as part of this whole restructuring of Cell C, in which Blue Label is acquiring a 45% stake for 5.5 billion rand. And the numbers made for very interesting reading for a number of reasons. The first showed that Cell C has accumulated incredible losses. I think the figure was 26 billion rand cumulative loss, if not 29 billion, I forget the figure, since it started. And its net debt position was a staggering 20 billion rand at the end of last year. This restructuring is meant to reduce the net debt position to below 8 billion rand. Still a large number, but they say it's then manageable. Cell C did get into a very serious debt situation. The other number that I thought was interesting was the subscriber number that was disclosed. And we ran a piece on this week, which Hilton Tarrant actually followed up on and did another a very good piece, really interrogating the numbers. But Celsi has previously said that they had between 20 and more recently 25 million customers on their network. And they used this as a basis to say that they were gaining huge market share relative to the competition. I forget the figures they were actually quoting, but I think it was over 20%. In the Blue Label numbers that came out this week, the number they quoted was 12.6 million, which immediately called into question, well, has Celsi actually made the inroads, especially against MTN, which we've all been saying that they have been making, based on the numbers that they've been disclosing? And it seems that although they have gained some market share, it hasn't been nearly as positive for them as they've been making out. 12.6 million versus 25 million is a very big difference.
That is a big difference.
25 million is double.
But is this all Celsi customers across mobile and potentially like their fiber offerings?
Or? Well, their fiber offering is tiny still, so this is mobile. I mean, I think their fixed line customers are probably number in the thousands, if that, at this stage. But I put the questions to them, and they said that they explained that the 25 million figure is what they call A4 customers, or customers who have been active within the last 4 months. And they claimed that this was the number that management used to set objectives for themselves. And the board set for management to meet. But the A3 number, which is active for 3 months, is 12.6 million. So yeah, the difference between that is about 12 million customers. So are they churning 12 million customers in 30 days between month 3 and 4? If these numbers are correct that we've been supplied, that Celsi and Blue Label have supplied, then there's massive churn going on the Celsi network between month 3 and 4. And, you know, one wonders why they were using this A4 number in the past when the standard standard for the industry has pretty much become A3 or active for 3 months. Mm-hmm. Certainly MTN, Vodacom and Telkom all use A3 numbers. And Celsi's been using A4. So now that we've got these numbers officially published in a regulatory document, in a regulatory filing from Blue Label Telecoms, we can actually really start to interrogate Celsi's true market share in South Africa. And it turns out, in the harsh light of day, that they haven't been making as many gains as they've been letting on, particularly in the contract market. They've done better in the prepaid market. And I think that must be disappointing for them, particularly given how aggressive they've been trying to get contract customers through those things like the contract buyout offer and other aggressively priced offers that they've had to try and win postpaid users. So I think that must be a bit disappointing to the market and to Celsi management that they haven't been so successful in that contract space, and that their market share is still sitting down at only 16% of the market, which they've said in the past. I'm not sure the current CEO said it, but certainly the previous CEO, Alan or Craig, said they need to be up at 20 to 25% to be sustainable as an operator. But anyway, they're being restructured now. They've got new shareholders coming in. I don't know what Blue Label's plans are for them and what the strategic thinking is behind the investment and how they can really start to grow Celsi's subscriber base. But that's the obvious thing that they're going to have to try and do.
Yeah, look, it certainly sounds like, playing up the larger numbers is kind of marketing 101.
Sure.
Pick a number that you can qualify somewhere and then just use it, even if it's outdated. I've seen this many times before.
Yeah. And the Vodacom and MTN did this in the early days as well. I think MTN was famous for quoting numbers that were not.
I mean, it's only a problem if it comes out. So,
It's coming out.
We all love Celsi. I mean, they came. Yeah. I mean, remember when they launched? They were kind of the underdogs that everybody loved. And
yes.
And they've done some really good things for the industry over the years.
Yeah, they have
pushed a lot of boundaries. So, it is a little sad to see that they are not doing as well. But I don't think they're going to go anywhere.
But they are. Yeah. No, they're not going to go anywhere. They are profitable. The numbers show for the first time ever they turned a profit of 2.8 million rand in the 6 months end of June. Now, to put that in perspective, 2.8 million rand is probably less than the CEO got paid last year, almost certainly. And the that was on revenue of 7 billion rand. So if you do the basic maths, it means their profit margin for the first 6 months of this year was 0.04%.
Wow.
Now, to be fair, they've just come from a net loss position. I think they lost something like 4 billion or 5 billion rand last year. So they've swung very quickly in the right direction. So maybe the second half of the year is going to show a big swing into profitability, and maybe next year is going to, the numbers are going to look very good. And the guys from Blue Label aren't stupid. They won't have bought a company think is not going to have a profitable future. And so I obviously see they've done their crunched the numbers, and they see this thing being a profitable business going into the future.
Mm.
But it's also a tough industry that they're investing in. I mean, you're coming up against MTN and Vodacom, which this year are spending 20 billion rand between them on their networks.
Sure.
You can't sit back and not invest. You have to densify your networks. There's regulatory risk because the spectrum's not going to be allocated, so you're going to have to densify your network, build more base stations. You're going to have to roll out LTE and LTE Advanced quite aggressively to keep up with MTN and Vodacom. So they're not exactly going to have an easy ride. But clearly the Blue Label guys are, think that this is a winner. And shareholders in Blue Label clearly think the same, because the share price has rallied massively. It's almost doubled since last year, this time last year, since the deal was announced. I think it's up about 90% or something. So investors, shareholders clearly see this as another entry into the sector. I think a lot of investors have become a bit jaded about MTN. I think a lot of institutional investors got burnt by MTN and what happened in Nigeria. And so they're looking for another in into the sector, and Blue Label's acquisition gives them that in. So I think there's probably been some switching out of MTN into Blue Label over the last few weeks, especially. But it'll be interesting. And, of course, LCE itself has said that they intend to list in the next 3 or 4 years. So I guess we can look forward to seeing detailed financial results from CELSI going forward. Anyway, we're going to talk about the MacBook refresh, the Samsung Galaxy Note 7, and the ICT white paper, but first we need to take a break.
Hello world. Hello information. Hello uploads and downloads. Hello streaming videos and low latency. Hello blogs and vlogs. Hello crystal clear video calls. Hello increased productivity. Hello online learning. Hello cloud. Hello long lost friends and missed connections. Hello limitless possibilities and instant gratification. Say hello to premium high speed fiber from Vox Telecom. Pleasure guaranteed. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Chicken or beef? Chicken or beef?
Chicken.
There's so many companies offering fiber at the moment, but with Vox Telecom's premium high-speed fiber, you'll be joining the Smile High Club.
Duck or salmon, sir?
We call it business class fiber. We guarantee our uptime and can tailor our services to suit your needs and budget. Say hello to business class fiber from Vox Telecom. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Rafat?
How's it, Duncan?
So, Apple has announced a date, October 27, next week, Thursday, I think it is, if I'm getting my numbers correctly. We're looking forward to new MacBook Pros, which has been long in the coming.
A long time.
A long time coming. Has there ever been such a long period in between MacBook Pro refreshes?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's been significantly long in an Apple kind of normal Apple launch period. So
they've obviously felt that they can sweat the existing product for quite a long time. I mean, the margins on the existing product must have gone up over time. All the prices haven't really come down. And also the components must have come down in price, so they must be making good margins on the existing product.
But look, in their defense, I mean, my MacBook Pro is now, 2 years old?
Yeah.
It was just before the last refresh that I got it. Mm-hmm. And now I got it for the same reason that, I can normally look at a Mac, kind of the MacBook range, and their longevity is quite good in terms of, kind of computing terms.
Mm.
But I think it's now way overdue just to get the faster processor, better graphics chipsets. I think that's the big thing. A lot of design graphic professionals, 360 guys are kind of big time now processing on the fly.
Yeah.
And that's when you need that power. And,
Stuff
that MacBook Pro has usually been known for.
Yeah. Especially if you have a Core i7 processor in it.
Yeah.
But I mean, what do we know about this new machine so far? It's obviously going to have a faster processor. It's going to probably have bigger storage capacity. What else do we know about it? It's rumored to have this panel of soft buttons along the top, which are going to be context aware. So if you fire up Microsoft Word, for example, it'll have little buttons that Microsoft would develop software in the code that makes those buttons relevant to the software you're using. If you fire up a web browser, it'll have a home button, a back button, whatever.
It could work very well if I mean, if Apple, if I mean, we know Apple can pull this kind of thing off, and if it's using some low-powered LED technology or that e-ink technology, I mean, we're just looking at a kind of a mock-up render of what it could look like.
And, yeah.
I mean, it could work in a kind of keyboard layout and kind of functionality-wise.
Yeah.
If it's a touch-sensitive panel, I can see a lot of value in it.
I think it'd be quite nice, actually,
that you remove that top point.
That's a good point. You could actually free up more screen real estate by having that there, allowing you to concentrate more on the document or whatever it is you're working on.
Yeah.
I guess we'll only get the real detail next week. It's quite exciting. I mean,
always exciting.
I certainly wouldn't consider buying a MacBook right now, not with the refresh coming.
Yeah.
In fact, I wouldn't even consider buying one earlier this year. I've been a bit slow in coming up with this update.
I just really hope they kind of look at customer feedback and a lot of them are saying just give us more processing power and obviously a really good battery.
Yes.
You know, max out the processing, max out the graphics. The graphics is very important these days. And, you know, obviously 16 gigs of memory, you can only use so much in kind of most of today's software in any case. But
the electronics, the electronics keep shrinking. You can fit a Core i7 powerhouse into a very small space these days. And that additional space can be freed up for battery. Unfortunately, Apple, like many other companies, has this thing with going for the thinnest possible, so that may impact on battery life.
But I wouldn't want to have a very thin MacBook. I mean, I'm not a MacBook Air type of person, because I'd rather give me the specs,
capacity and the capacity. Especially the battery. That's probably the most important thing. Anyway, we'll know next Thursday, the 27th, exactly what gets announced. We'll probably be talking about it in our next podcast, so let's not spend too much time on it now, since we'll just be speculating.
But yeah, my one question, just on a parting note, I wonder if they're going to do away with the headphone jack.
I hope not. It's already rumored that they're going to do away with the USB 3 ports and go USB-C.
Yeah, which is another, it's a bold step to do away with USB completely. I mean,
especially on a pro device.
Yeah. But then again, are they going to justify it with a dongle?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I was chatting to a friend of mine about this the other day, actually. I was thinking about it. Maybe doing away with full-size USB doesn't actually matter that much. You can get these little adapters for next to nothing, I'm sure. And it does allow Apple to make the device thinner.
Yeah.
Although, again, on a MacBook Pro, do you really want it to go that thin? I can see it having appeal on the MacBook Air or the MacBook, which is a device I would never buy because it only has one port. But then it's not a pro device.
More ports would also be more useful.
I think getting rid of a 3.5mm audio jack on a computer, I mean, I think that would be Apple thumbing its nose at its customers a bit too much.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys use it for many reasons. I mean, use it as an auxiliary output as well.
Yeah,
But yeah, let's hope not.
I don't think they will. Anyway, keep it on. Next Thursday, probably evening South African time, there'll be a keynote. Tim Cook will come on stage and we'll know all about it. Let's talk about Samsung. Oh, my word.
Shame, these guys.
Note 7 is dead.
Yeah.
Officially. Which is probably the right call.
Yeah.
I mean, when the repaired devices went out and started catching a light, I think that's the time to call it a day on a product.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though they shipped in the original batch, never mind the follow-up batch, shipped 2.5 million of these things. And as a piece we carried the other day pointed out, these have non-removable batteries, so they're not exactly devices that can be refurbished either. Yeah. So they're probably going to have to be scrapped. It's not something they can put into the market. They're just going to have to destroy them.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, you can't really disassemble these things. It's a pity. I mean, it was one of Samsung's best devices, according to me. I didn't play with it, but I spoke to a lot of people that did, and everybody loved it. You know, there was only good sentiments towards this device.
Yeah. It's such a pity, because Samsung is, I mean, also, if you look at the Galaxy S7, Samsung really is producing the best phones it's ever produced right now. And it's such an unfortunate, and it could have happened to anybody. Although some people have said that, I was listening to the Twit podcast this week in Tech, Leo Laporte, and he was there was a guest on there, I think it was, I forget who it was, but someone on his podcast was saying that Samsung put a 3,500 milliamp hour battery in this thing. And the concern is that this battery was too dense
and he was going into the technicalities around it, but the denseness of it may have caused the heating problem, and it may have been Samsung's desire to produce a device that was better than the iPhone that was about to launch, and wanted to produce a device that had a battery life that would beat the iPhone 7 Plus.
Yeah.
And the mistake was trying to pack in too much battery into a device that it wasn't suited for. The suggestion was that maybe they should have gone for a 3,000 milliamp hour battery, or even a 3,200 milliamp hour battery, not 3,500 milliamps. And that this may have been the downfall, and that indeed the next Galaxy Note, whenever it comes out, may have a small battery.
I'm quite surprised that, I'm sure they explored obviously replacing those batteries with a lower capacity battery, but maybe they just couldn't get them in time. I don't know.
Many MBA dissertations are going to be written on this one, I'm sure. Yeah.
Look, I know they'll definitely come back harder, and it'll be interesting to see the device that they're going to kind of bring out.
Samsung is going to come back all guns firing. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. The only question is, when do they bring out the Note 8 or the Note 7.5 or whatever they call it? Do they bring it out before the next Galaxy, which is due in March, as normal, around Mobile World Congress? Or do they wait a full year before they bring it out?
Good question.
Do you really want to bring your Note 7 launch into competition with your Galaxy S8 launch?
Yeah.
Your Note 8
launch? No, I think they would scrap the version number and just say, let's just put all efforts into the next one do it better.
And bring it out in a year.
Yeah. Because, they wouldn't pull a Microsoft tactic where they're going to beat the dead horse with the same version number. They'll just say, okay, this was a failure, let's just move on. And bring out something bigger and better that will wow everybody more than what the previous device did.
Yeah. I wonder if they regret skipping from the Note 5 to the Note 7, maybe.
I wonder if some head roll. But I did see also online, there's actually a very, I'm thinking of getting this, there's an iPhone case, an iPhone 6 and 7 case you can buy, that when you put it on, it looks like a burnt Samsung device.
Of course.
So there's a little front sticker that you put around the bezel, and it looks like a brunt.
There's a mod, I think it's for GTA 5.
Yes.
There's a mod where you can use Samsung Note 7s as weapons to blow things up.
There's no bad PR.
Indeed. Well, Samsung has taken quite a dim view of this and is considering legal action, which I think would be a mistake. But the phones are banned now from flights all over the world. SAA is banned at the South African Civil Aviation Authority has said that these may not be taken on any aircraft in South Africa. Fines of up to 2.5 million rand if you take it on board in some parts of the world, not here.
No.
But a disaster for Samsung. They're a very well-run company. I think they will get over this quite quickly.
Yeah.
And I think by the time the Galaxy Note 8 comes out, the Galaxy S8 comes out in March next year, we will have largely forgotten about these troubles.
Yeah. I look forward to their next big device.
Yeah. Anyway, lastly in the news this week is the ICT policy white paper, which we spoke about briefly in our last podcast. We've been running lots of opinion pieces, and I've run a few of my own on Tech Central in the last few weeks, really criticizing government over this plan to create this wholesale open access network, but to reserve all high demand spectrum for its exclusive use, in effect creating a monopoly over high demand spectrum, and even threatening to take away the existing spectrum assets from the mobile operators, which is clearly unconstitutional. Now, we've run a number of pieces, Dennis Smith from BMIT, Alison Gilwald from Research ICT Africa, and a number of other people, all with very good opinions on the subject, and criticizing government for this plan, saying it's unworkable in the case of Alison Gilwald. Now, we've run a very lengthy piece yesterday, which is well worth reading, and I'm very glad to have carried it on the website, and I'm hoping Tech Central will become, and it already has become, but I'm hoping more so, it will become the platform to really discuss this white paper in detail and really start to get the industry engaged on exactly how it needs to be changed. Now, we've carried this piece from the Acting Director General of the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services, Joe Mdjwakha, who's the guy who really oversaw the development of this policy. It's quite a defensive piece. Not surprisingly, his policy has come in for withering critique. And he's really sprung to its defense. And I will write a follow-up to that piece in the coming week or so. Because I think it can be, I don't want to say taken apart, but I think it needs to be criticized in return. Because I think the root of the problem here is that the government is proposing a all-or-nothing approach, where the wholesale open access network is everything. We're going to go for this open access approach to the exclusion of everything else. And that's very risky. That's very dangerous. Mm. In fact, Telkom this week, Brian Armstrong, speaking at a conference this week, said that it's clearly dangerous to, for one thing, to try and take away spectrum from the existing operators. And he's also spoken out against the wholesale open access model in urban areas where infrastructure competition is important. So I think the country needs to find a middle ground. I think there's potentially merit in the whole wholesale open access model, but I don't think it should be done to the exclusion of everything else, to the exclusion of a model that has actually worked, despite what government seems to think. MTN and Vodacom had a duopoly for a long time. Prices have arguably been too high. But they have also delivered SIM card penetration to the extent that it's reached 160% of South Africa's population. Hmm. Phones are in the hands of probably 80% of South Africans. And that's successful, I think.
Yeah.
Now, you can argue that data prices are too high, and we've seen this whole data must fall movement, etc., etc. But there's no doubt that there's been huge successes here as well. I don't think we should throw the baby out with the bathwater. And that's what government is proposing in this white paper. So I'm hoping that Tech Central can be used as a platform to discuss these issues. And heck, I'm even happy to, if the parties want to do it, for us to host some sort of forum where people get together, the industry gets together to discuss this and thrash out the issues and find out how the white paper can be changed so that it doesn't punish the incumbent operators, which, you know, is what the white paper in effect does right now. So there we go. I mean, those are my thoughts on it. I'm going to write a more detailed response to Joan Dwacha's column. And again, I want to thank him for writing it on Tech Central, contributing that piece to us. Because I think it's important that this debate happens. And I'm happy that we get used. We are used as the platform to debate the issues. And hopefully, you know, the outcome at the end of the day is that we end up with policy that actually makes sense for the sector. And I think the white paper has actually got a lot that's good in it. Large chunks of it are actually very good. But the stuff particularly around spectrum needs further consideration. And I think that debate needs to happen. And I think it can happen quite quickly, and that policy can be changed quite quickly. I don't think this is a thing that needs to be debated for years I don't think we need indabas and colloquia and, you know, these things going on forever and discussions in the ANC, you know, debating this as they have in the past for years on end. I think we can move on this in a matter of months and actually get a proper policy out there and start to get the spectrum in the hands of the people who need it to roll out networks, whether that includes a wholesale open access network or not. I mean, that can be discussed, but certainly the existing incumbent operators need the spectrum on an exclusive use basis. Then we can talk about creating a wholesale open access network as perhaps an experiment to see where it goes. Mm. Set certain goals and targets. If they don't meet them, then revisit it. But don't do one to the exclusion of another. I think that's just silly, especially when the other option, what we've had until now, hasn't been an abject failure. Anyway, end of rant. So let's move on to our regular features. Our winner this week is Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella, and I've picked him because I was watching CNBC late last night, and Microsoft's first quarter earnings came in, smashed expectations of analysts. Satya Nadella has really taken Microsoft since he took over from Steve Ballmer, and he's really take it in the right direction. I think a lot of this was the underpinnings were already there under Steve Ballmer, but he's really accelerated them. He's closed down the mobile business, which was clearly going nowhere. He's and he's really focused on cloud particularly,
yeah.
Which has proved to be a huge success for Microsoft. So they smashed earnings expectations. We haven't seen the markets open yet at the time of this recording, but in after-hours trading last night, Microsoft was at an all-time high share price. It was up, I think, 5 or 6% in after-hours sure. trading. Could go even higher today, and it's at a record market value. And I think I saw a piece on Bloomberg or Reuters or somewhere that said that the last time Microsoft was at this level was at the peak of the dot-com bubble,
sure.
about 16 wow. years ago. So it's taken a long time to claw their way back up, but. I think their market cap will open around $480 billion in the US today, which will put them just behind Google. Still some way off Apple, but I think a few years ago people were writing off Microsoft. Mm-hmm. They said, you know, it's game over, it's tickets. They've missed the internet. They've missed the search game. They've missed mobile. Actually, it turns out mobile didn't matter that much to them, they're doing fine. Thank you very much. Corporate, enterprise, software, cloud computing. They've built a big business around that.
Microsoft, and they've really improved their stuff. I mean, I've been using their online. I mean, we've spoken about Office 365 numerous times. Mm. For my wife's company, we hosted Outlook.com, which is an incredibly easy service to use and set up and add. If we need to add accounts, we can quickly do it. I mean, you're paying 60 odd rand, but it's for two or three accounts. It's so worth it for all that functionality you get. It's been good to follow Microsoft and use them again.
Yeah. I was skeptical initially of the software as a service model, but I like it now. I subscribe to Microsoft Office.
Mm-hmm.
I get a terabyte of free storage on OneDrive, and I use OneDrive as my default.
That's the other thing, yeah.
I use OneDrive as my default cloud platform, actually.
I
back up all my desktop. I use multiple PCs. I back everything up to OneDrive automatically.
Yeah.
I think they're firing on all cylinders at the moment, and the results are showing that. Even though the PC market is in a funk and has been for many years and probably will continue to be in a funk, they're proven that there's money to be made in cloud services.
Well, have you noticed that there's been a lot of updates to the Microsoft Office platform?
They do a monthly update. They've got a monthly update that comes out now.
I just wish they would make those files a bit smaller. I mean, the fiber doesn't really matter, but it's 700 meg updates.
Yes.
But at least it shows they're doing something. I'd rather have that than
constant improvement
faulty software.
And I mean, no one ever talks about Microsoft Office anymore. It's not really the sexy thing, but everyone uses it.
Everyone uses it. I speak to people often where they say they actually move back from Mac because they want Office. They don't realize Office on the Mac, but
Office on the Mac is not as powerful as Office on PC.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially not Outlook. Although Outlook has improved dramatically on Mac.
No, it has improved. Yeah.
But it's actually worth subscribing for me. It's worth subscribing to Office 365 just for that storage. You basically get the Office suite for free.
Compared to Dropbox, I mean, if you pay for Dropbox or you switch to Office 365, you get a terabyte of services,
yeah.
and your Office 365.
Yeah,
it's a good deal. Very good deal.
It is. I know a lot of people still use Dropbox.
I'm still a paid-for subscriber too.
Oh, yeah.
I need that file revision history and just the desktop tools.
Okay.
I find the syncing because I work off those files live, I need the syncing to be
instant.
Much better, yeah. I find Live Drive is not as smooth.
Okay.
But we use it. I mean, I back up all my other stuff that I don't use daily. Mm.
Our loser this week is MTN, continuing troubles up in Nigeria. I see there's the Senate up there, the equivalent of our parliament, I suppose, is really going after them, accusing them of illegally repatriating more than $14 billion out of the country. It sounds like it's trumped up. The company denies it, but they're facing so many challenges in that market, and the share price is just getting hammered down and down and down. It's getting close to 100 rand a share. If you consider it was at its peak, it was sitting at 250 rand a share. It really has come down dramatically. It's at its lowest level since 2010, so it hasn't been this low since 6 years ago.
Hmm.
So they really are having a tough time, and it's still a good 7-8 months until Rob Shooter takes over as CEO. And he's got quite a few challenges. I suspect he's going to have quite a few challenges on his hands when he gets there. But one has to wonder whether MTN share price is reaching its bottom now.
Mm.
The bad news can't keep flowing forever. some bright event has to happen at some point to get that share price back up again. But at the moment, it's not looking good for MTN. So they're our loser this week. What's your pick this week, Richard?
Okay, so I've been fixated to my phone for the last few days. I actually got this at Rage, and I met the guys, and it's of this product. I'm sure you're familiar with, everybody would have heard of this, but Google Cardboard.
Yeah.
Now, I've never played with it up until now, and I've used it a couple of times, looked at videos, but it wasn't until I was able to view my own videos that I shot in 360, okay. Because I've got a 360 little rig that I do some shooting with. And it's really kind of just unlocked a whole new world for me again. Just in terms of now kind of expanding my hobby of shooting 360, but also discovering new videos. And there's a lot of amazing content on YouTube that works with Google Cardboard. So, I mean, you've obviously seen it, but I just want to give you like a quick preview. So this is a video that I shot on a golfing green up in Pretoria.
Oh, wow.
But, I mean, using your iPhone and using this Google Cardboard, which costs $150.
Yeah.
You do need your glass if it does work, but I mean it's not really ideal if you've got glass. It kind of, you know, you need to just find that sweet spot. But
it's okay.
Poor man's virtual reality experience. I mean, I'm very impressed. $150. Anybody can do this. There's a company called the website is thevirtual.space. They sell these guys the cardboard version 2. And I've been having a lot of fun and really kind of showing a lot of people what virtual reality is really about, you know, and kind of just give them a sense of this immersive experience.
So have you shot any, can you shoot drone footage?
Not with my drone, but you can if you, yeah. I've actually been working with some guys who's got drones that can carry up to 8 kilograms,
yeah.
And you just reverse mount a 360 camera at the bottom of that.
Yeah.
But the thing with 360 is you want to be closer. I guess it depends on what we want to go for. But I want to be more immersed in experience. I want to be closer to the action, or in the middle of a crowd of people, or where if you take something up with a drone, you know, it's a different experience, but it's more visual from a distance. So like you can see what a landscape looks like.
It's pretty cool.
A lot of fun. I mean, $450, like I said.
Yeah. Where do you buy these from?
So the website, thevirtual.space, it's a guy up in Joburg. I met him at Rage.
Okay.
They sell these things actually for $150, $149 rand, and you can get straps. So you can put it over your head, cost you another $30.
Okay.
But it's a piece of cardboard with two lenses. Now, what makes version 2 better than version 1 is it's got a little button built in. So this is a transistive little flesh, a little membrane.
Yeah.
So you can actually tap on the screen, and if you're browsing YouTube, you can just keep browsing YouTube videos all the time. A hell of a lot of fun to play with, and it was nice showing people, you know, what is this experience about, and a lot of people are wild. And there's a really lot of good content on there. Maybe if I can have a pick B to this, there's actually an app called Within. It's called Extraordinary Stories in Virtual Reality. Now, these are kind of downloadable videos, 360 videos that you can get that lives on your phone.
What's it called?
But Within. Okay. Yeah. I mean, there's some stuff shot by the New York Times, and there's some kind of documentary style under the sea type things.
Oh,
and there's a few artist videos on here, too, where kind of artists talk about, you know, how they create and their spaces and that kind of thing. And it's some really good content. I mean, and makes virtual reality interesting. You can actually see where the value lies in it.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I'm gonna grab, find out whichever drawer I put my Google Cardboard in, and have a look at that.
The SNL skits is quite nice. I mean, it's literally just. I mean, some of them are really nicely produced. Some of them, like the SNL one, is just a camera stuck somewhere. But you get to see the audience. You get to see how they shoot behind the scenes.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Nice.
It
puts a new twist on just being just scrolling on your YouTube video.
Cool. Great. Well, I've got a very cool pick this week. It's actually what let me just say, I haven't seen all the Android phones this year. I haven't seen the Note 7, for example. That's not on the market anymore. And I haven't seen the S7. But I've seen most of the other Android phones, and I think this is the best Android phone I've seen this year. And it's called the Motorola Moto Z.
Motorola?
Motorola. Hello, Moto.
They're back.
They're back in the South African market after an absence of several years. And it's... at first glance, it looks like your average slablet, I call it.
Slablet.
It's 5.5 inch, so it's in phablet territory. It's it's a great phone. It's got a Snapdragon 820 processor in it, 4 gigs of RAM. I think it's 64 gigs of storage. I think there's a 32 gig option as well. Fingerprint unlocker is very good, very snappy. And it's a great little device. The first thing, I'm just going to demo to Rafat here because there's a lot of demoing that needs. Actually, we should have video here for this. But they call it a modular phone. So you can take the back cover off. It's connected with magnets.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I'm just going to take the bumper off, the little bumper plastic that comes in the box.
Does it come with all of these little accessories or do these optional extras?
As far as I know, it comes with the bumper, the little bumper case and the rear cover. It's a bit tricky to take the bumper off, I've discovered. Here we go. Now, have a look how thin this thing is. I think it's 5.5 millimeters.
Wow.
Which is pretty incredible. Now, the camera sticks out a bit. It's a 12 or 13 megapixel, I think it's a 13 megapixel rear-facing camera. Very, very snappy camera. Takes good pictures.
This is very nice.
It's incredibly thin.
This is really a mix. If Apple and Apple and Samsung phones kind of...
Yeah.
And babies. This is the result. But it's very slick.
It's beautiful.
A little edgy, which is kind of what I like. It's not as rounded, which means it doesn't slip out of your hand. Like,
yeah. But incredibly thin. Now you'll notice on the back there's a whole bunch of weird-looking connectors. I'm just going to snap the bumper case back on the front of the phone. Snaps on quite easily. Now you'll see... this just snaps on here using the magnets. Sits on very nicely.
So you would walk around with this back...
You walk around with the back cover.
You don't
really
take it off and have it just...
You don't. You don't, okay. Yeah. Right. And you wouldn't want to do that anyway. The back is a little bit ugly with the connector sitting there. Yeah. You could take it off and walk around with this ultra-thin phone if you really want to show
but this
it.
Wouldn't fall off. I mean, it's a magnet.
It's a magnet. It doesn't fall off. It snaps in. It snaps in comfortably and it's solid. Now, what's really cool about this is it comes with something called Motor Mods.
Yeah.
So let me demonstrate the first motor mod I've got here, which is the JBL Sound Boost.
Ooh, nice.
Now what you do is you literally just plonk it on the back, snaps on. Now it's stuck nicely on the device.
Oh, that's clever.
So let me just fire up Google Play Music. Let me just find some music. You know what I was listening to the other day was that...
Something Heavy, No Doubt.
We listened to a lot of Lunatic Soul, which is a great band out of Poland. But there was a particular track I was listening to. It was, and I love it. It's a really old track from the 70s by Boney M. Called Mar Baker.
Oh, Mar
Do you remember
Baker,
that
yes.
song? I'm really not a fan of Boney M. Let me just...
what do you mean you're not a fan of Boney? Christmas is coming up. You're going to hear it all the time.
Freeze! I'm Mar Baker. Put your hands in the air and give me all your money.
Turn the sound up. Right? Have a listen to the sound coming out of this. Now, I don't know. People listening to this are going to get the full experience. But that's pretty impressive, isn't it?
That is impressive. I mean, this is a portable speaker that you snap onto your phone.
It is. And what's nice, let me just pause that. What's really nice about it, it's got a little stand at the back as well. So my wife and I were listening to a podcast the other day in the car, and it was so good we wanted to carry on listening to it. So I just snapped this on the back when we walked into the house,
nice.
Plopped it onto the table, and we carried on listening to it, and with proper volume and stuff. And it was fantastic.
And this doesn't make the phone... I mean, the phone is obviously a bit chunkier now. Is there any battery in here? Or is
there's
just
a battery.
A
there's a battery in there as
does
well.
Does it charge the phone too? Or does it just...
It appears not to. So you have to charge it separately with the USB-C cable.
Oh, I see.
It's a
speaker is powered on itself.
Yeah, it is, yes.
Very nice.
So it doesn't drain very your phone nice. Battery, which is pretty cool.
I mean, I would definitely walk around with this. If I know I'm going to the park or whatever, or going out with friends, you know, I can snap this on. It's actually not too big. You can
exactly.
pop it in your pocket.
And I mean, if you go away on holiday or something, I mean, you know, you don't want to lug around something to listen to music. You can just pop that on your phone. You can listen to music.
Very nice. I like that.
And we all stream our music these days.
Yeah,
anyway,
exactly.
So it's fantastic. So that's the JBL Soundboost. That mod costs 1,699 rand, which is not excessive.
I mean, it's an external speaker. Can I have a look at that?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, this is the external speaker that you slap on it. I can see there's a charging port here too for the battery.
Now, the second motor mod I've got here is the this is called the Hasselblad True Zoom mod.
Oh.
I thought this might blow your mind.
That's quite lekker.
You snap this on, right? You snap this onto the back of the thing, and let me just unlock the phone and go into my camera. Now, if you have a look at this,
that's interesting.
Pop this up, Now, this is, offers a 10 times optical zoom on your smartphone. It's got a dedicated release button, shutter button, and zoom button. So I'm just going to demonstrate this directly here. We're going to zoom in into the distance.
That's very cool.
Optical. So this is something you just can't do on a normal smartphone. Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously using the sensor of this attachment at the back. I mean, it's not using the phone sensor.
I would guess that is the case. Yes, it has its own sensor. Yeah, it has its own sensor. You're right. But a very, very nice attachment made by Hasselblad, which of course is famous.
Of course, I mean that's a brand to carry around.
Yes, right? And you can just use the dedicated release button, shutter button there to snap a picture.
And from the front, it really looks. I mean, you wouldn't if somebody shows this to me, you wouldn't be able to say that this is a phone on the back here. It just looks like a.
It now looks like a
point and shoot. Yeah.
It's got a proper flash on it,
which is another good reason to have something like this because mobile photographs, obviously with flash, those. Although they've improved, not always as good as the big ones. Hey, that's very impressive. What does this phone go for though? 12? What did you say? 12?
The phone itself is 12999 recommended. You probably get it cheaper than that if you shop around. But it is a high-end phone. It's sort of in the price range you'd expect from a high-end Sony or a high-end Samsung. That particular mod, the Hasselblad True Zoom mod, costs not cheap, $4,299.
Sure.
Yeah, it's quite pricey.
But it's a Hasselblad. I mean,
it is a Hasselblad indeed. Yes. But it's beautiful.
It's very nicely done. I'm quite impressed. I mean, it looks like it fits there. You know, it doesn't look out of place or something that was just plonked on the back of a design. You can see the phone was designed with.
And it looks like they're conjoined. It doesn't look like they could be separated. Yet you literally just peel it off the side and they come apart.
Nice.
And you can put it back in its pouch and plug your.
Question: Can you use that separately? Probably not.
No, you can't. It has to be used with the Moto Z.
So that one doesn't have power. The Hasselblad.
I think there's a battery in here. Although I'm not 100% sure about that. It's quite light, actually. There probably isn't a battery in that component. There's definitely a battery in the speaker.
There's no battery in here because you can't switch it off again.
Okay. And there's no charging port on it. That's a good point. Yeah. Whereas this has got a USB-C charging port on it. So that's quite cool. There's a couple of other mods which I don't have here, unfortunately. The one is called the Moto InstaShare Projector mod, which will turn your phone into a projector.
Nice. I can see how that could work. Very nice.
That one fetches $4,699. It's also not cheap. And the other one which I don't have here, which I think probably be the best selling one, is the Incipio off grid power pack mod.
Yes.
Which adds basically doubles the battery life on the phone without adding a huge amount of heft to it. So
nice.
The battery life on this Moto Z is pretty average. You'll get a day from it if you don't use it too heavily. But if you're a heavy user, just snap on the Incipio power pack mod, and you're guaranteed to get through the day no matter how heavily you use your phone.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So it's one of the coolest phones I've seen in a while, Moto Z. The only downside, I suppose, is that we don't keep our phones for that long. So if you upgrade your phone every 2 years, then you're going to end up with these accessories that you spent a lot of money on, which might be useless.
Yeah, true. I mean, but I think with any technology really, even if you buy a camera these days, it's not going to last you more than 2 years. So you're going to be replacing everything.
Yeah.
Regardless, I think.
Yes.
But you know, this is. I think our tech gadgets do last longer these days. I mean, something like this. Even if you pass it down to the kid, maybe you'll spy him to become a photographer one day or something
Still. And I suppose even if you do upgrade, you can keep this separately with the Moto mods and use them just for listening to music or taking
pictures. This with a speaker snapped on could be a very nice little outdoor entertainment system.
Exactly,
People can come up, choose their music, and have music playing.
Because
you've got this big screen just kind of constantly on your streaming service.
It doesn't chow your phone battery, which would have been a real downside because obviously a speaker like this would destroy the phone battery.
Yeah. Do you know what the battery life is on that speaker?
I don't. I'd have to check. I don't. It's quite heavy though, so I'd imagine that it's reasonable.
I mean, JBL speakers generally, they're up there with the better ones. So.
Anyway. Just wanted to play that song.
We know what you're going to be doing this weekend. Margaritas and music.
I won't be listening to any other Boney M songs.
No, that's a good song.
It's a great song. It's a great song, actually. Great stuff. I think that's our show this week. We just need to do our quiz results. Do you want to kick it off, Rafa?
Sure. First question. We finally have... we had sight of Celsius full financial numbers. How much of the net profit did it turn in the first 6 months of 2016? The answer, 2.8 million rand, and that is on a revenue of 7 billion rand.
Which smartphone did... this is hard now. Which smartphone did Lenovo launch in South Africa this week? And the answer is the Moto Z, or I think they pronounce it Moto Z.
Moto Z. Hello, Moto.
Third question. Naspers this week sold one of its investments for 46 billion rand. Who was it? The answer, Allegro of Poland.
Microsoft shares hit a record high in after-hours trading on Thursday, but the company remains the third largest tech company in the US. Which companies are bigger? Apple is first and Google is second.
And the fifth question. The new HBO science fiction series Westworld, which tackles issues like artificial intelligence, is receiving rave reviews around the world. It's based on a 1973 movie that was directed by which well-known author and movie director? The answer, Michael Crichton.
Great, well that's our show this week. As always, if you've got any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. And we have been getting quite a few mails in the last few weeks, and we'd love to read your feedback and your views on the show, what your thoughts are on our weekly beer feature now, anything else you'd like to see on the show that we don't do, or anything that annoys you that you'd prefer we didn't do, drop us a mail, info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, from Richard and myself, take care. Cheers. Cheers.